This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about root beer.
Another thing I am very unfamiliar with. We are on a roll.
We apparently are. Okay, well, so you have... Annie, a specific story about why you're unfamiliar with root beer. And by unfamiliar, you mean right before we started recording, you were like, wait, is this Dr. Pepper?
Yes. So I clearly don't know what it is. And I'm almost 100% certain I have never had it.
Gosh.
Yeah. So I used to think growing up that it was actually beer.
Oh, yeah.
And so I did not drink it, which is funny to me now because one of my best friends loved root beer and root beer floats. And every time she told me about it, I was like, troublemaker.
And then I know. Scandalized. I love
this. I was, in fact. And I know I've told my Fresca story where I drink a bunch of Fresca thinking it was beer. But I guess if root beer had been there, maybe I would have gone that way. And my life could have gone very differently. We don't know. But then I think it was 2005. I was in high school. Somebody dared me to give up soda. And I did out of spite. And then by the time I realized there was no alcohol usually in root beer, I'd given up soda, so
oh,
the window
okay.
was closed.
Yeah, it was already over.
Yeah, it's too late.
Goodness, this is such a strange, like this universe of no root beer that you live in is such a strange alternate universe to me, or to mine, because, like, I grew up drinking root beer, like, regularly. Like, we made it in class in the first grade.
Oh, that sounds like a cool project.
It was a very cool project. I did not like the resulting root beer. I remember thinking that it was too earthy and bitter, which means that I would probably love it today. But yeah, like on when my dad and I would take road trips, we'd make a special stop at an A&W drive-in and I would get a root beer float. My dad was so excited when IBC became widely distributed, which is a brand that sells root beer and cream soda and stuff.
I do love this. We have very differing experiences on this particular topic.
Yeah, I do. And I do think, this might be like a northern versus southern thing because, yeah, like the that A&W pit stop would be in like Ohio or Pennsylvania. So,
right. And it is interesting and something we're going to touch on in this episode, that whole beer part of this name and how that's been used and viewed over history, because I definitely thought it was a beer.
I didn't associate the word beer with the alcoholic beverage. Like I knew what root beer was long before I knew what beer was. And so like it was like years and years later that I was like, oh man, these two different beverages share a word in common. I wonder why that is.
And you never thought, oh, is root beer beer? It was just, oh, they're very separate.
They're very separate things, yeah.
Okay, okay. All right, well, you can see our soda episode for more detail, especially on, like, soda fountains and stuff, which does play into this story.
Yeah, for sure.
But in the meantime, let us get to our question.
Mm-hmm.
Root beer. What is it?
Well, root beer is a type of drink that, while originally made of roots and beer, today may not contain either necessarily.
Ah, very clear.
Clear as root beer. It is most often a carbonated, no or low alcohol soft drink with complex sweet and bitter and earthy flavors, with both like warming and cooling herbs and spices, usually a hint of creaminess in there. There's no like single recipe, but common ingredients may include sassafras root bark, sarsaparilla, vanilla, spearmint and or wintergreen, anise and or licorice root, molasses and or honey, ginger, cinnamon, nutmeg, clove, allspice, juniper, coriander, birch bark, cherry tree bark, hops, burdock root, dandelion root. It can contain a lot of different things.
I have no idea what this could taste like. That helps me none, other than it sounds like spicy, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. The I guess the base notes of it are that it's sweet and a little bit like there's like a little bit of like a minty cooling flavor and a little bit of like a spicy flavor, and then kind of like a little bit of like bitterness to round it out.
Would it be interesting? You know, we should bring back. We did like one taste test on here one time, and it was licorice. What if this is something I try and it's a sixth thing I don't like?
Oh no. Wow.
I have to change my whole worldview.
Expanding your list to six?
I know. See, grapefruit was on there, but grapefruit has been removed. So there's a spot. There's a vacuum there.
Well, I'm glad that you decided that you like grapefruit. Grapefruit is delightful.
Oh, I love grapefruit now, but as a kid, oh no.
oh goodness. Okay, so I guess traditionally speaking, the two ingredients that contribute the most to the profile of root beer are two that we might not be very familiar with in modern times, and that being sassafras, which is a type of plant. Woody sort of plant. It's what a filet is made of, which goes into gumbo and stuff like that. And in this case, you're going to be taking the bark of the root, and so you get this kind of like this like spicy, minty, earthy sort of flavor out of it. Sarsaparilla, I think, is more on the bitter herbal side. It's a vine, and you might also be using the skin or the bark of the root on that one. I'm not entirely sure, y'all. At this point, most root beer recipes are like, buy root beer extract from McCormick and then. And so, you know.
Right.
But at any rate, some places do market the same drink alternately as either root beer or sarsaparilla. And I think sarsaparilla is what it's called frequently in countries outside of North America, because y'all, this is like the first North American product that I've seen like widely described as gross by the international community.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And the line of thinking seems to be that it reminds people of mouthwash or like one of those like topical icy hot type rubs or medicines.
Uh-huh.
Possibly because of the inclusion of ingredients like wintergreen that can contain these menthol-y sort of compounds like methyl salicylate. So, yeah, reminds people of mouthwash.
Okay, that doesn't sound good. I'm trying to keep an open mind.
Oh, gosh. And although in many forms today it is non-alcoholic, you can make it alcoholic. It is traditionally brewed like a beer, using friendly yeast to eat sugars and poop alcohol and carbon dioxide and flavor. The amount of alcohol in the final product was traditionally quite low, like under 3%, often under 1%. But it can be produced so that it's higher. You can also make root beer the non-traditional way by making or buying a flavored concentrate and then adding carbonated water or, you know, adding still water and carbonating it by forcing carbon dioxide into the mixture in one way or another. And yes, you can totally make it at home.
It sounds like you should. It sounds like you should redo your first grade experiment.
You know, I'm really curious to you know, sort of like Amaro's. There you go. It's sort of like the flavor profile of an Amaro.
Okay, well, I like Amaro.
Yeah.
This is so strange. I'm so torn and I feel like I'm being pulled in different ways. I'm being pulled apart.
Oh no. Yeah, yeah. Well, so yeah, I'm like curious to like try to get all of these roots and herbs and spices and sort of see what proportions of what would make up a root beer flavor. Because I've got a very specific idea of what I want it to be.
I like this. I think you should do it. I think that there's kind of the way you're describing it, I'm imagining it as very witchy and I like that, but also experimental.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do have a friend who calls me the science witch. So.
Oh, yes. That's perfect. All right. And I want notes.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep us posted.
Got you.
In the meantime, what about the nutrition?
It depends. You know, it does tend to be a sugary drink, and sugar should generally be treated as a treat. And treats are nice, you know, enjoy them. Yeah. Read your labels, though. You know, the empty calories of soda can be quite caloric. So just, you know, be yes. aware, be aware. Mm-hmm. Research has shown, though, that of common sodas, root beer tends to be less acidic and therefore might be easier on your teeth than other sodas.
Okay.
Yeah. And some of them do come caffeinated. So if you are caffeine sensitive, watch out for that. And yes, there are some brands that are brewed to be alcoholic, though they are, Annie, distinctly labeled and sold in the beer section, not like to children. Nonetheless, drink responsibly.
Is it like root beer, parentheses, actual beer?
It says like alcoholic and will have like a percentage on the label. Like any other.
I'm still suspicious. Okay, so we do have numbers for you. A&W is the top-selling root beer in the world, and there are over 1,000 A&W restaurants around the world, and I actually saw some estimates that were higher. So a lot.
The alcoholic brand, Not Your Father's Root Beer, was technically the most popular craft beer of 2015, with 1.95 million cases sold.
Wow, that shocks me. That was legitimately shocking to me.
Okay. Me too. Like, I knew it was a thing, but I didn't know it was that big of a thing.
Yeah.
More on that later, though. As of 2021, root beer is the most popular flavor of soda in Kentucky, Maine, North Carolina, and South Dakota, according to Eat This, Not That.
That's an interesting assortment of states.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. It's apparently a popular homebrew among Amish and other plain sect communities. In Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, roadside stands sell thousands of bottles a year to tourists coming through.
And there is the root beer store in Washington State that offers over 100 root beers. And I really enjoyed going through their site because they had this whole section like, but what if I don't like root beer? Like,
oh, no.
We have other things. Like, I get it. You have to have other things for people who don't. But it was just funny to me that the root beer store is like, but we have other things, but
don't
also 100
worry.
Root beers.
There's cream soda, but 100 root beers.
Yeah. So clearly a fan base. People like it.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting history of how it came to be.
There is, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, Indigenous North American tribes made beverages, often medicinal in nature, that involved sassafras roots that served as the base of what would become root beer. When European colonists arrived to North America, they adapted these recipes and started making so-called small beers using whatever was regionally available, including herbs and roots for bitterness. While some of these beers were alcoholic, not all of them were.
Or at least not very. The idea of small beers is that the amount of booze in them is small. These days, it's regulated as something like more than zero, but under 3%. I think it's usually like 0.5% to 2.8% is what you would consider a small beer. But when folks say that in ye olde times, people drank more beer than water, this is the sort of beer they're usually talking about. And it's beneficial as opposed to water because, like, well, A, it's flavored and mildly carbonated, which is fun. But also, you know, you've boiled the water that you used in making it, which can kill off some germs. The even low alcohol content can be antimicrobial. And those flavoring herbs that you added can be antimicrobial. So good times all around.
Right. Common small beers included ginger beer, sarsaparilla, birch beer, and root beer. Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, and Thomas Jefferson all drank root beer, and from what I gathered, they all had their, like, specific recipes, or at least George Washington,
yeah.
Thomas Jefferson did. I don't know about Benjamin Franklin, but
well,
seems like a thing. By 1842, a few varieties of root beer were being advertised in the Philadelphia area, many as a health drink. These ads claimed it could act as a blood purifier, a cure for summer complaint, and a cure for cholera, as well as just generally boosting your health. A Philadelphia-based pharmacist by the name Charles Elmer Hires frequently is credited with popularizing modern root beer. Hires was born in 1851, and the story goes that while he was honeymooning in New Jersey, though there is little to back up that detail, it's frequently included, but little to back it up, he came up with a recipe for a type of herbal tea called tisane, which was, he wanted it to be an alternative to alcohol. And the primary ingredient to this recipe was sassafras. It was so good that he decided to package it and sell it as a dry mix. At 25 cents, these packets yielded 5 gallons of finished product. But for the carbonation process to take place, the dry mix had to be combined with water, yeast, and sugar, and then given time to ferment before it was ready to drink. So a friend of his named Russell Conwell suggested that Hires work on a liquid formula for this product, something more convenient. And Conwell would later go on to found Temple University, by the way. Hmm. Yeah. Hires got to work developing a carbonated beverage. The end result utilized 25 roots, herbs, and berries, or 16, depending on the source. He debuted his creation called Hires's Root Beer. They probably didn't put the extra zzz on there, but that's how I read it. At the 1876 Philadelphia Centennial Exhibition, and people loved it. They loved it. The family started selling bottled root beer in 1893. By 1904, Hires developed a root beer syrup for distribution. According to some accounts, 115,000 bottles of this product were sold in the first year, and he called it the great health drink. Some accounts claim that originally Hires was going to name his product Root Tea, but figured he could attract a larger consumer base with beer in the name. Yes, yes. And depending on the source, again, this was because he was trying to capitalize on the temperance movement in terms of here's a non-boozy alternative to beer. And or he knew the crowd in Pennsylvania had a liking for beer, so he put beer in the name instead of tea. Not a lot to back either of those up, but both very funny. Some people involved in the temperance movement attempted to get root beer banned in 1895, despite the fact that, yes, it didn't contain alcohol or had these very low levels of it. However, it kind of backfired and brought more attention to root beer. Got more people interested in it. And Hires was a really great advertiser, one of the first major and mass advertisers in the beverage business. I think that's been one of the most surprising things of this whole history to me is how influential root beer has been in a lot of ways when it comes to advertising and things we take for granted, which we're going to get into. Yeah, so he was one of the first to take out full-page ads, had these trading cards created. The logo was featured on all sorts of items. And Hires himself and his rags-to-riches story, as he told it, became a recurring element in these ads. And going back to that, like, syrup thing, apparently that was another part of his whole deal was he was, like, going around and making sure people knew at these, like, soda fountains how to make his product, that they had what they needed so that it could get more attention and more people would buy it. Okay, so I feel like this could be a whole separate episode, but briefly. Coloradan Frank J. Wisner often gets the credit for creating the root beer float in 1893. However, very difficult to verify. The story goes he got the inspiration from the Rocky Mountains, like snow-capped Rocky Mountains.
You know, with a lot of these soda fountain and ice cream related stories, it's easy to imagine that any number of human people took these two things that they liked and were like, oh, what if I just booped them right together?
What if I just straight booped them?
What if I straight booped them?
Yeah, it's funny. I totally agree. And it was funny to me that the article that I got this information from was talking about how it probably came from Chicago. And I had to double, like, do a double take because he's from Colorado. Like,
wait. So you're like, well, okay, sure.
Interesting twist. All right. A series of root beer competitors, seeing the success of Hires' product, followed soon after it debuted. In 1898, Barque's Root Beer debuted, the brainchild of Edward Barque. He bottled and sold his product in Biloxi for the first time in 1897. This root beer contained less sugar and more carbonation than comparable products at the time.
Then in 1919, IBC was first created in St. Louis. This was during Prohibition, and it was intended as an alternative to booze.
Right. And then Roy Allen opened a root beer stand in California in 1919, handing out his first bottles that year at a parade welcoming back returning soldiers. Allen partnered with Frank Wright in 1922 to form A&W Root Beer. A for Allen and W for Wright.
Okay, okay.
Yes, yes. In 1924, Allen bought Wright out and trademarked the product. Allen started franchising the following year, creating one of the first restaurant chains in the United States. To this day, most A&Ws make their own root beer on site. Apparently, there was a brief period where they didn't, and then everybody was like, no. And
yeah.
And then they switched back.
Yeah, yeah. Also in 1924, Stewart's brand started out as a root beer stand in Mansfield, Ohio.
I love this because there's so many of these I've never heard of because I have no experience with root beer. And I'm like assuming that people are listening and like, well, yeah, that one. Well, yeah, I guess so.
Stewart's is a large brand up north. So pretty familiar to many people from that region.
I shall take your word for it. In the late 1930s, Chicago, Barney Burns and Eli Clapman arrived at the recipe for Dad's Root Beer in Clapman's basement. It came in the now ubiquitous six-pack packaging invented by the Atlanta Paper Company, one of the first products sold this way.
Huh.
Yeah. The Belfast Beverage Company sold what was first called Belfast Root Beer in the 1940s. The name later changed to Mug. Old-fashioned root beer, and then later to Mug root beer.
This is the brand that has the bulldog mascot on the can, and I ran into the endlessly fascinating fact during my reading for this episode that the mascot's name is Dog.
Straight to the point. Just this is like, you know, when you ask your 3 or 4 year old to name a pet.
And yeah.
Dog.
Or it's Dog.
Or yeah. Either like Stuart. Yeah. Right. Something in there. I love it. Jumping back a bit to 1927 and Washington State, couple John and Alice Marriott opened Hot Shop, a root beer restaurant purchased from A&W that grew popular enough to allow the Marriotts to pivot into the hotel business. Now, I just stopped myself from going down this rabbit hole because it's like, we're not a hotel show. And a lot of the, like, you know, one line explanation was A&W led to the Marriott. And I'm like, I'm not sure quite how. I get that they started there, but I don't see the jump to the Marriott. It sounds like they had enough success that it allowed them.
It became pretty big. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Fascinating. Fascinating. In 1953, a root beer and hamburger stand named Sonic first opened its doors. Now there are 3,500 of them all over the U.S., all serving root beer, and from what I understand, a lot of them in Texas.
Huh. Yeah. I had no idea that Sonic started as a root beer stand.
Me either. I have a really embarrassing story about Sonic where me and my friend, we were in high school, we didn't have cars, so we walked through the drive-thru of the Sonic and ordered, and then we went and waited in a parking spot. And then they were like, you know, you could just order, you could have just sat at the table. It ordered that way. There was no need. We were very tired. We'd been at Six Flags all day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. But that was the last time I ate at Sonic. Burned that bridge.
The shame has stayed with you. Oh, no.
It is intense. So As all of these companies entered the root beer market, because we've just gone through a lot of them, along with competing products like sodas and sweets, root beer purveyors did struggle. Non-alcoholic root beers did benefit from prohibition and the temperance movement, but so did those sodas. Mm-hmm. Some did market, some of these root beers were marketed as medicinal. The FDA threw a wrench in that for a lot of companies in 1960 when it labeled sassafras root slash oil as a carcinogenic and banned it from mass-produced food and drug products. Because it was a primary ingredient in many root beers, the root beer industry took a hit. Brewers reformulated their formulas with artificial flavoring in a lot of cases or other flavorings. And in 1994, the ban on sassafras oil was lifted.
Yeah, it was. So what was going on here was that some research found that this primary compound in sassafras called safrole was indeed carcinogenic in rats when given to those rats in large doses. And this compound is also found in stuff like nutmeg, cinnamon, black pepper, and sweet basil, but it appears in much higher concentrations in sassafras oil. Some root beer manufacturers worked out a way to remove the safrole from sassafras oil so that they could keep using it. But, you know, it is one of those kind of key flavor compounds in there. So, I don't know. From what I've read, it's basically like, well, don't drink over 35 units of root beer that contains safrole every day, because then you'll probably get cancer.
Okay.
But I'm not sure why you would.
Yeah, there'd be some questions I would have.
Yeah. In general, this really brings us back around to our Savor slogan, which is, you know, bodies are complicated, more research is necessary. Before ingesting a medicinal dose of anything, consult a medical professional who is not us.
No.
Not us. I think the research that I've read is like, yes, in high amounts, safrole is not good for you, but probably what you're consuming through any product that contains it is not enough to really worry about. So, yeah, anyway.
Anyway. In 2019, A&W launched a petition to get Merriam-Webster to add the ampersand to the alphabet. That was another fun rabbit hole that I had to stop myself because I was reading out the history of the ampersand. People were like, yeah, there's a precedent for this. People were really passionate about it.
Oh.
It's still up there. It's got hundreds of thousands of signatures.
Oh, wow. That's great. Uh-huh. That is a specific form of nerdery that I completely approve of. Oh, geez.
Yes.
I really want that grammar show.
One day. Recently, there has been a resurgence in home brewing root beer.
Yeah. Along with the rest of the home brewing buzz, root beer has been included in that, which is super fun. There has also been, like we were saying in our numbers section, this resurgence in hard root beers with a discernible alcohol content. Around 2014, a few brands started really hitting the U.S. market to this impressive success. This one brand, Coney Island Brewing Company, when its root beer debuted at Whole Foods, they were seeing a 400% growth rate in sales month over month.
Whoa!
Yeah. The folks responsible for another leading brand, the aforementioned Not Your Father's Root Beer, said they went through 78 recipes over 2 years before they came up with their brew. And they got a distribution deal with Pabst, as in like PBR. Mm-hmm. And they made $7.2 million in sales during the first half of 2015.
Wow.
And then finished the year at number one, as technically the number one craft beer in the country. There's some argument about whether it should have been considered craft or beer.
Of course.
There was a whole lot of like pearl clutching amongst craft beer writers that year.
I can see it. I absolutely believe that.
They were like, why is this product, which is essentially Smirnoff Ice, being called beer, and let alone something that's being distributed by Pabst being called a craft beer?
Mm-hmm.
get off my lawn, get off my beer lawn. Yeah.
Right.
Which, you know, which I understand and also don't understand. I'm like, all right, you know, let people like what they like, man. But
yeah, I feel like this is an opportunity to, this probably has already been done and I just don't know about it, but to remake Sideways, but with beer, you know?
Oh, 20,000%. So. Yeah. Let's get, someone get Paul Giamatti on the line. Where's Paul?
Somebody's got his number. I believe it. I'm surprised we don't already.
I know.
It's
Paul,
ridiculous.
Call us.
Yes. This is ironclad. Guaranteed to succeed. Just like this root beer, I guess. Not your father's root beer.
Yeah. I think it was a spike in popularity that has since calmed down a little bit. Mm. But yeah, no, you can still find such products out there. I happened to go grocery shopping this morning, and I bought a bottle of Jones Soda Company root beer. Not a sponsor, just a company that I generally enjoy. I don't think I've tried their root beer before, and I have not opened it yet. I'm looking forward to that later.
Yeah.
The craving is real. The craving is real. We have to, I want to get, like, I wish that there wasn't COVID for many reasons, but I want to get like 7 different kinds and like do like a taste test and, you know, kind of go through the gamut of different root beer flavors.
The root beer gamut. I'll get out my Thanos glove, which, by the way, I've used enough that I had to replace the batteries.
That's great. Of course you have.
Yeah. I was like, wait, this can't be possible. Oh, yeah, I guess so.
You're like, oh, no, that's totally possible. Well, that makes perfect sense. That
No, I definitely want to know what you think. And I'm wary, but I want to try some. I am wary.
I think that's fair. I think given that you don't drink soda.
That's true. I'll have to make an exception to my rule. Work usually is an exception.
Okay. And that you have a grudge against one particular soda.
I, just thinking about it, my blood is boiling. Yes. I would crush that with my Thanos glove. That is a story for a different day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and also international listeners, I'm really, really curious if this is true, what Lauren described of like kind of this despising of root beer outside of the United States. So let us know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. But speaking of, we do have some listener mail for you.
We do. But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. That's what I miss the most about sodas, that first sip.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the best part.
The good bright carbonation and
And it kind of stung almost.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
And kind of like hot, like ginger spice kind of kick to it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have dreams about it sometimes.
Oh,
I do miss
wow.
it.
Wow. Huh.
Red wrote, "Your classic episode on toasting was wonderful, but you made a crucial historical error. The raucous winter tradition of wassailing involves going around to your neighbor's houses where they will give you drink, and not the other way around. It has ties back to feudalist Britain, where in the wintertime, wealthy landowners would reward their workers with some big holiday parties. In a weird way, this reinforced the social hierarchy. For this one special time of year, the lower classes were treated like esteemed guests, and the wealthy would serve them for a change. Over the hundreds of years, wassailing turned into bands of roving partiers going to the rich neighborhoods and demanding that they honor this old tradition. Imagine a bar crawl, but the bars are your neighbor's houses. Surprise! In colonial Boston, a group calling themselves the Antics caused complaints such as breaking furniture and making lewd comments about the lady of the house.
Goodness.
I know! In the 19th century, Victorians sought to make Christmas more family-friendly in general, and they turned wassailing into caroling. They replaced the booze with coffee and hot cocoa, and instead of running right into your house, they would politely stay at your front door. But that is why to this day, if carolers do come to your door, you still feel compelled to give them some Christmas cookies. It's a holdover from the days of the Lord of the Manor providing them a feast. I am lucky enough to be connected into the folk world, and we actually keep the spirit of wassailing alive and well, with some modifications for modern society, of course. Every year, my friends hold a huge party at their house where we feast and make merry. We sing the old wassailing songs, of which there are many, and we make a proper wassail, flames and all. Hmm. The traditional way to get the sweetener into your wassail is to pile sugar cubes on a rack over a big old bowl of red wine. Then take a warm, cordial mixture of dark spirits and winter spices and pour it over the sugar, dousing it. Then grab a match, light the surface of the punch bowl on fire, and slowly and carefully ladle the punch over the flaming pile of caramelizing sugar. We make a big batch, so it takes quite a while for all the sugar to melt away and the flames to die down, usually about 4 songs. Hmm. I've included some photos to try to give you a feel for the experience. Unfortunately, COVID has ruined all in-person folk singing, so we had to throw a virtual substitute this past Christmas. I am hopeful that next year we will be able to once more gather around the flaming wassail bowl and raise the rafters with our songs.
Oh,
all of that's so amazing. I hope so, too.
Yeah.
I would love to attend this. I should not be in charge of flame ever.
No, no.
But I can watch from afar.
Yeah.
Sing terribly. Enthusiastically.
Enthusiastically. Terribly. Yes. That's the more important part. Yeah. No, I like this idea of fire booze at old-timey karaoke. This sounds perfect.
Yes. And I love how there's so many traditions and in this context around food and drink where we just take for granted like it's this holdover from some ancient, like not ancient, but feudalist Britain. And it's what it has evolved into over time and just the history of that. And it kind of reminds me of Halloween where you would pick out the best houses with the best candy.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it wasn't your neighborhood, that's where you'd go.
Especially if it wasn't your neighborhood.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what it reminds me of. But this sounds like a great time.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Todd wrote, I have a long relationship with dandelion. My degree is in botany, and I've always been interested in wild plants and herbology. The first scientific name of a plant I memorized was, Compositae Terrazacum officinale. In the sixth grade. In Boy Scouts, I learned to cook and eat dandelion. In the late 80s, I worked in the north of England and would often shop Sainsbury's, buy a 2-liter bottle for 98 pence, and enjoy a chilled glass of dandelion and burdock soft drink on a hot summer day. I love Fentimans, but at nearly $3 a bottle, I really miss the good old days of being in England. If you go foraging around your neighborhood with the idea of gathering and eating some fresh dandelion greens, you really need to be aware of where they're growing. Since they are a most hated plant, they often get sprayed with one kind of an herbicide or another. They're also bioaccumulators. They might contain herbicides from the current season for spraying, or they may also contain toxins from chemical residues contained in the soil. That is one reason they're so expensive in fancy eateries. Restaurants need to buy certified organic product or from a forager that collects from relatively safe areas that don't get sprayed. A little FYI thing to share with you about how dandelion seeds spread and implant themselves. The dispersal by wind is obvious, but the really cool thing is that they are programmed for finding optimum environmental conditions to grow. You can see in the diagram that was attached that the seed is pointed and barbed. As the pappus disc carries the dandelion seed hither and yon, when it senses an area of high humidity at the correct temperature, the pappus disc actually folds up like an inverted umbrella, so the whole thing is kind of arrow-shaped. The dandelion seed plummets to the ground and, hopefully, embeds itself with its pointy, barbed seed into the soil that provides the correct environment for germination. The barbs help the seed stay in place until it can germinate, root, and grow in its new home.
That's so cool.
That is so cool.
Gah. I was just house sitting for somebody, and unlike me, she actually has a yard and a bunch of dandelions in it. And every time I saw one, I'd be like, respect, dandelion. Bro, I got so much respect for you.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, goodness. That is delightful. Thank you. Always send in botany notes.
Oh, please, yes. Thanks to both of those listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.